Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. On the right, I'm Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
And on the left, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And you're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Big show today. In round one, we'll be talking about Syria. There's a new de-escalation zone going into effect, actually four of them. We're going to talk about why it matters and whether this is a way towards peace and maybe a break in the worldwide Syrian refugee crisis. Then in round two, there's great news for President Trump today and for America, quite frankly, as the unemployment rate is at the lowest level in 10 years. We'll talk about that and the mystery health care bill. Finally, in the third round, we'll go to France. No, not literally. We're not literally going to France. We'll go to France, and we'll talk about this weekend's election. Can Macron defeat Le Pen, or will Le Pen pull off a Trump-like miracle and come back from a 24-point deficit? And the big question, why is President Obama meddling in the French election? All of that is coming up today on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Hey, Garland, how you doing?
I am fantastic.
So this is not, I'm going to point out that Fault Lines is not a de-escalation zone. I'm sorry.
Is it a safe zone? Can we call it a safe zone?
It is not a safe, you're not safe,
oh,
Garland.
Darn.
I have warned you. So it's a miserable day, kind of. It's kind of muggy and rainy in D.C.,
and it's nice and warm, though. At least it's warm. If we're going to be wet, at least we want it to be. If it's going to be wet, at least we want it to be so warm and muggy that when we wear our raincoats, then we'll sweat really bad under it. That's the way we want things to work. So we're both wet on the outside of our raincoats and wet inside of our raincoats. That's what makes you really miserable.
That's the theory you're going with on this one.
Yeah, that's what I'm running with.
I liked it when it was sunny. That's my theory. I just liked it better when it was sunny. That's all. So as we're like, it hasn't happened yet, but literally at the end of the show,
literally
5 o'clock, we're live right now, 5 o'clock Eastern time, whatever that is, Syria time.
2100 Greenwich Mean Time. How about that?
Oh, you show off.
I read it. I don't even know what Greenwich Mean Time, when that really is or where, or, you know, I couldn't find Greenwich on a map. Connecticut, maybe.
I have my talking computer watch here. I should be able to figure this stuff out with my talking computer watch, but I haven't been able to. But at that time, the end of the show, for anybody keeping track, if any Syrian rebels are listening, at the end of the show, you can't kill anyone anymore. That's the rule.
Not in the safe zone. You have to step outside of the safe zone to kill anyone
right.
Or be killed.
Now, these safe zones, let's talk about it, because this is one of those issues where, quite frankly, the American media, which I think we've established, Garland, that we're not big fans of the mainstream media.
I'd say if people have been listening to this show have figured out, Lee, that you and I aren't the biggest fans of the American media.
We'll talk about this when we get to France later, which, by the way, I just like the way that sounds. We'll talk about this when
we get to France later.
Macron's doing the same thing. It's RT and Sputnik and these Russian outlets are demonizing people. But here's what I think, because the whole idea is it's Russian propaganda, right? Well, I think people are smart enough to figure out when they're listening to something called Sputnik. I think you're smart enough to figure out maybe that you could build that in. But this is what I'm saying to people. Read all outlets. Check out all outlets and check it out. Now, the Drudge Report, to Matt Drudge's credit, and by the way, he's going to get slammed as a Russian propagandist for this.
Probably already has been.
Talked about those Syrian safe zones. And these safety zones are a big deal. There's going to be four of them established. And this came up as a result of these Kazakh talks. And these are talks that Russia, Turkey, Iran has been involved in,
and the rebels,
the armed rebels,
right.
And who they're trying to keep in check here are the maniacs, the nutcases like ISIS, like the
Al-Nusra Front.
I was going to call them the artists formerly known as Al-Nusra.
Oh, okay.
Because
they changed their names again.
They have changed their names. Yeah, they have some new name, and so the artists formerly known as Al-Nusra, but it's essentially Al-Nusra. It's the same group of people. For those of you keeping track at home, there's al-Nusra, or the artist formerly known as al-Nusra. Al-Nusra is an Islamist group and they're crazy. And then there's ISIS, and they're an Islamist group, and they're crazier, right? So if the people in al-Nusra are like, hey, dude, you're a little hardcore. Hey,
yeah,
chill.
You got real problems. That's like al-Qaeda tossed ISIS out, the ISIS guys out, because they were too extreme.
It's the same thing. Al-Nusra is basically an al-Qaeda affiliate.
Okay.
They're clearly, al-Nusra is clearly Saudi Arabian connected, by the way. Anybody can Google that and find that out. ISIS scares even Saudi Arabia. See, because you have to understand, there's two things going on here in Syria with these groups. Number one, they're Salafi groups, which means they're fundamentalist Sunni groups. But it's not just that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The danger comes, we have a guest that's going to be on next week that will help explain some of this stuff. But it's not just that they're Sunni groups, and that they're hardcore Salafi groups. There's also this extra element of basically, they believe that all leaders are infidels. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you're Saudi Arabia, you're like, okay, well, I'm with you on the Salafi part.
Yeah, but the leaders is infidel parts. We kind of part ways
exactly
on that.
Exactly right. The Saudis at that point are like, whoa, hey, slow your roll a little bit on that part. And so what's happening is, now this is a big deal. And it's a big deal because Putin talked to President Trump on Tuesday about this. And President Trump put out what they do is every time they have a meeting with a leader, they put out what's called a readout, which is a goofy name to me. I'm sorry. It's kind of a goofy name, a readout.
But we're accustomed to it.
Okay. I'm getting used to it. But anyway, they issue these readouts. And in Trump's readout, it talked about de-escalating violence in Syria using these safety zones. And now Putin yesterday in a news conference said, I talked to Trump about it, and he agrees. So now we know from Putin, for those of you worried about fake news, we know from Putin and from Trump. You with me?
Right. Well, and here's the other part. I think it's important, Iran, Turkey, Russia, they've all been involved in these talks in Kazakhstan. Here's what I think is important from my perspective, because, you know, people listen to the show know my disdain for the neocons and the neocon ideology.
And God bless you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are a lot of people maybe disagree with me on everything else, but they're right there. And here's why, what I think it's good about this. It discredits the neocon regime change ideology. If you remember, you know, with Undersecretary Clinton, The move was made towards regime change to get Assad out. You remember they came, there was a red line, there was Assad must go, all these kind of things, right? But what we've seen, and also to discredit everyone, whether it was Iran or Syria or the Russians, everyone who wasn't an immediate U.S. ally or was perceived as an enemy was discredited as madmen, as not rational actors and rational players. So we couldn't possibly strike a deal with these people. We had to move them aside, which meant that the only option was, of course, regime change based on our military. But what we've
seen. Well, and admittedly, some of these guys are not like, you wouldn't have them to a picnic.
No, and that's right? The thing about it is, though, but what we see here is, I'm not saying that, you know, we will agree with them ideologically on things. What I'm saying here is this, that rather than the madness of regime change, which has backfired and we're still suffering blowback from it to this day, what we're seeing here is, and Lee and I had discussed this, our concern that the neocons were basically infecting and taking over President Trump's foreign policy. But what we're seeing here, and you know, there are people that are going to complain because I say anything positive about President Trump, but I'll say, well, here's what I say. I will say that I think it was the right move to say, we're backing off of this Assad must go stuff and simply say, if there is a way to work with Iran, Russia, the Martians, whoever.
Let's not work with the Martians.
Can we agree not to work with the Martians? You got to do with that. Didn't you see? I mean, come on. I've seen enough movies where the Martians invade. If you can work with the Martians, you better work with them first because they'll vaporize you.
Look, I'm not racist, but those green bastards have got to go. That's all I'm saying. You talk about an alien problem in this country.
Yeah, I think
the Martians are actual
them.
Aliens.
We
maybe
work
I'm
with
a little
the
biased.
The neocons, they don't want to work with the Martians. I do. My point being this, and that is, It demonstrates to me that we're moving away from regime change and that we're actually saying we will work. And I'm going to say this. Some people are going to be upset by it. It also demonstrates to me that Benjamin Netanyahu is not directing our foreign policy. And I'm going to say that because I feel like, you know, if you remember a while back, Secretary Clinton said this, there was a recording. You can go online and find it where she said, Benjamin Netanyahu, you know, we've got to take out the Syrian government for Israel. I am not opposed. I'm pro-Israel. I'm pro-everybody. But my point is U.S. policy should be U.S. policy, shouldn't be Israeli policy, shouldn't be Canadian policy.
Well, let's talk about the problem here. You sound like a nationalist, so good for you.
No, buddy.
We're working on you here. It's okay, Garland. It's working. So here's the thing. So Netanyahu.
He ain't going to be happy about this.
Let's talk about Netanyahu's buddy, Jared Kushner. And when I say his buddy, I mean Netanyahu's talked about Jared Kushner's buddy, Benjamin Netanyahu. Bibi is very close to the Kushner family, Charles right. Kushner, who was a big Democrat donor. Bibi Netanyahu slept at his house. He slept in Jared's bed. Jared was down. Get those ideas out of your head. What's wrong with you people? Stop it. Bibi Netanyahu slept in Jared Kushner's bed when Jared Kushner wasn't there. When he was a teenager, this is known. And when Netanyahu was at the White House, he gave what the kids call a shout out.
Right. Exactly.
To Jared Kushner. I think it's possible he fist bumped him. Okay.
They called it a terrorist fist bump when Barack and Michelle did it.
That didn't happen. But he did give him a shout out. He did. He said, hey, Jared Kushner.
That's my boy there.
My man.
He's a member of my crew, my faculty, as they say on the.
And so here's the danger. So. Well, let's talk about who cares. Let's just go to that for a second. Who cares about Syria? Whatever. Syria, whatever. You know, when I went to Lebanon back in 2013 to cover this, I did a video and I talked about it. And I predicted at the time there were two major reasons that Syria was important. Number one, and I was right, of course, because I'm always right.
Except when you're wrong.
But I'm always right. No, I am. I always get ahead of stories and I'm always provably right. And what I said at the time was, nobody here was talking about it in the media, but I went there and I said, this is going to be a big deal because of the refugee crisis, one, and because of the rise of groups like ISIS and al-Nusra. I named them. You can go watch the video. I posted it in 2013. It's September. It's date stamped. And so let's talk about why this is important and why I just brought up Kushner. It's important because if we can get peace in Syria, if these safety zones work and start to de-escalate things. And by the way, here's the other thing that this means. This also means that Russia is negotiating with who?
With us?
But also the more moderate rebels. It's not that they're
exactly.
moderate.
Yes, yes.
Let's put it like this. I don't like the term moderate because they're all kind of Islamists.
It's relative, though. Moderate is relative. Right. You know, for instance, during World War II, the moderate wing of the Nazi Party tried to take out Hitler. So relatively, there's a moderate, you know what I mean? The moderate wing of the Taliban were the ones that people were able to do some negotiating with. So every group has its extremists and their moderates. But like, for instance, this radio show, I may be considered a moderate and you may be considered the extremist. Perfect example.
Or vice versa. But at least Russia's dealing with these armed opposition. That's what they're called, the armed opposition. And this is important because you just brought up Netanyahu, and I brought up he's close to Kushner, and Kushner is married to the princess.
Ivanka Trump. Yeah, Ivanka that's Trump. Right. We that's can call exactly her the princess right. from now on, right?
Yeah, and so the reason I bring this up is Ivanka Trump made some statements about the Syrian refugee crisis that just show she's ignorant. And this is my concern about her is that she's an ignorant liberal. And the ignorant liberal part of her wanted to say that we need to bring in Syrian refugees and we need to do this and that. And my take is no, we need to help end the Syrian civil war so the Syrians can go back to where they'd like to live, which is Syria. Now, these safety zones, if nothing else happens for right now, at least they're creating places where Syrians can go. Because, again, I interviewed him in 2013.
Here's the truth when we talk about refugees from anywhere. Let's just say that there was some horrible thing happened in Maryland and wherever in the East Coast. And Lee and I had little backpacks and we're walking across the border into West Virginia to survive. The fact of the matter is we'd really want to go home.
That's quite an image, by the way.
Yeah, it is kind of scary. But especially in this bad weather. But the fact of the matter is, as you say, I'll give you this. The Syrians don't want to leave Syria. They're Syrians. And this gives people an option to stay home. But they left because it was a war-torn wasteland. And I agree with you there. You protect people there. You give them an opportunity to stay in their homeland because people don't want to leave.
I'm still stuck on this idea of you and I with backpacks walking into West Virginia. I just picture us. We're walking down a train track. We got sticks.
Right.
Right. It's like Stand
the
By Me
kind of thing.
Suddenly the train's coming, and then we have to run for it and everything like that. It's very exciting, really.
It's after some horrible disaster, you know, like an earthquake or, you know, a nuclear holocaust or something horrible.
But this is like something horrible. Watch this segue, Garland. Something horrible like the Syrian Civil War. See what I did there?
Yeah, exactly.
And so this is really important because our muddled U.S. policy, and the president right now is muddled on this because he's got the princess in one
ear. At least I'll say he's going in the right direction.
He is, which is the direction he ran on. This is the direction he ran on. And, you know, I read an interesting article this morning in the New York Times talking about what's going on inside the White House. And they said that Kushner was upset at Breitbart and he blamed Bannon for it. Kushner does not seem to get that Trump voters don't like Kushner's policies. Trump voters don't like Ivanka Trump's policies.
How about this? That he and Ivanka aren't the president and first lady. Well, I don't think he gets that either.
They're not even good advisors. And all I mean by good is they don't represent. I'm okay with Reince Priebus being an advisor, even though he's a more moderate Republican than I am. But at least he's in the ballpark. He's a Republican. Ivanka and Kushner are clueless, dare I say, ignorant liberals.
Now, keep in mind something, and here's the other part of that. These are people, you know, I'm a progressive, I've been a Democrat, you know, for my whole life, right? These are people in the Hillary wing of the party who were rejected by their own party. You know what I mean? So the Republicans are like, we don't want their policies. The progressives, the base of their party is like, we can't stand these people either. Why should they be advising anyone?
That's exactly right. Ivanka and Jared Kushner and Gary Cohn and Dina Powell. They would all be very comfortable in a Clinton administration. Dina Powell, a little less so, but she's friends with all of these liberals. She's a Republican, but she pals around with Arianna Huffington and all of these liberals and Democrats. Like, I'll call them establishment Democrats for your part. So here's the thing, and let's take this back.
You can call them liberals because I'm a progressive. But those of you who don't know, the liberals are the right wing of the Democratic Party. The establishment, I didn't call them right or right. They're the establishment wing of the Democratic Party. The non-establishment wing, we consider ourselves the progressives.
Well, so let's just tell people what they need to watch out for. And this goes back to what I said at the very beginning. What you need to watch out for is whether this proposal for safe zones gets ignored by the U.S. media, gets torpedoed by the U.S. media, or gets torpedoed by people inside it. Is there going to be another sudden Russian thing? Is there going to be another sudden accusation of chemical weapons?
They've already started to say things like, well, the U.S. planes aren't going to be able to fly, you know, kind of insinuating that we've been pushed out or we're being dominated by the Russians. And it seems to me that they're trying to turn people away from it. But this discussion has already been made.
So people really need to look out for this. They really need to watch out for this, because what you need to be aware of is the establishment media has an establishment agenda. Read for yourself. Watch videos for yourself, look things up yourself, and see what's going on. In the next segment, we're going to talk about domestic policy, the healthcare bill, and unemployment. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan here on Radio Sputnik. Got a lot more to go. We got round three. We're going to talk about the French election. But right now, we're going to go back to domestic policy. The U.S. economy added 211,000 jobs in April, rebounding after a weak month. The unemployment rate in April fell to 4.4%, the lowest since May 2007. We're looking at some really good numbers right now. Now, what's funny about this, and we know, look, we all know how it works in Washington, D.C. We know how the game works. You know, when the jobs numbers were kind of bad in March, the president said, that's really a leftover from, in all fairness, I just got here. And we know how it works
when you
are a politician. And no matter what side of the aisle you're on, when you're a politician and you come in, anything good, you say, hey, you know what? I got elected, so I'm responsible for it. And anything bad, you say that guy, I mean, it could be 5 years ago, you say that guy that before me or woman before me, why they're the ones that screwed it up. That's the fact of the matter. My opinion is when you see economic changes, you're looking at 12, 18 months. You know, some economists will say it takes 2 or 3 years. It takes a while, really, unless there's something, some dramatic change before you see it.
I don't agree with that.
But the bottom line is this. The numbers look good right now. There are a lot of people like Garland. This is where Garland is, so you know that. I feel that we probably between 2017 and 2019, I predicted this for a while, we're going to look at another recession. Simply because every 10 years or so, we're in this bubble bust economy. That's the way it works. That's what I think. I hope I'm wrong, but that's my projection. But right now, the president's saying, hooray, look what happened. It's all me. Well, you know, the economy's been rolling around for a while. And there's been no, actually, let's face it, there hasn't been much of any legislation that's gotten out, least of all any legislation to affect the economy. But I'm going to clap my hands and say, good. I hope the economy's good. I hope the economy's strong. We got a lot of things to work on.
Well, let's talk about the most important job numbers, because the 211,000 are nice, but the most important job numbers that were at in April was two jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be Nixon and Stranahan on the fall lines. Right. Thank you very much, everybody. Good night. Drive safely. So here's the thing. First off, I don't agree it takes a long time for these things to turn around. Let me explain this. As a small business owner myself, I have a couple business. I have Citizen Journalism School.
Did you hire 211,000 people in April?
What's that?
I said, did you hire 211,000 people in April?
Not quite. But I have Citizen Journalism School, which is an online thing I do, and then I also have my website, The Populist. I'm looking at hiring people in the next month or two. Now, and I've had other businesses before. I've had visual effects businesses. I've had magazines. And it does not take 3 years for stuff to turn around in a big way. And the reason it doesn't is because as a business person, I look ahead and I'm like most business people, and I go, what are the trend lines? And if the trend lines are good, I'm going to bring on more people. I'm going to hire more people. You with me? Now, the other thing that happens is that, and I think the trend lines are good. The other thing that nobody's talking about, and this is part of the Steve Bannon whiteboard agenda, and nobody's talking about it. No one's talked about the infrastructure spending that they want to add. When was the last time you heard him talk about infrastructure stuff? It's been a while, right?
Right.
Now, this was one of those things where Trump is a populist. In other words, he's not a straight Democrat, not a straight Republican at all. Trump is a builder. He's a guy who's built stuff. He knows how to bring in on time and under budget. He is successful at that. Have you been to the Trump Hotel here in town?
I've walked past it many times.
It's fantastic. You and I should go there sometime and have a $6 iced tea. Which is worth it. It's a fantastic, they renovated it really quick, considering what a disaster that building was. They renovated it. It's gorgeous. And you can get you're a pescatarian.
Doubt if I'll be drinking any $6 iced teas anytime soon.
I'll buy it. Here's the thing. They give you the refills free.
Oh, well, wait a minute. That changes everything.
Exactly right.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm a guy, I have no problem paying $5 for a cup of coffee, and I have no problem paying $6 for an iced tea. To sit in a beautiful atmosphere that's often filled with Republicans, which is part of the reason I like it. But my point is, Trump is a builder who's brought stuff in on time and under budget. Bannon pushed for this infrastructure. Now, Obama talked about infrastructure, but Obama hasn't built anything. So
it was blocked by the Republicans repeatedly.
No,
but that's okay.
It doesn't make any difference. He had no private sector experience. The dude is completely inexperienced in the ways of business and the economy and doing anything. My point is, when you get Trump behind infrastructure spending, and don't forget, the first day Trump was in office, the first day, maybe it was the second, but I think it was the first, who did he meet with? Union officials, union building officials. Do you remember this?
Yes.
First, second day, right? So when the infrastructure spending kicks in, and combine that with the fact that him being tougher on immigration means anybody who works in the building trades, I'm not going to tell anybody who works in the building trades will tell you illegal immigration is a big problem in the building trades. And by the
way, it's not for Trump because he had a bunch of illegal immigrants working for him. So it ain't a problem for him.
No, it is. And let me explain why. It's the same thing. Andy Puzder is the guy who was up for labor secretary a couple months ago. And they were like, oh, well, he's hired illegal aliens. Well, that's because he works in the restaurant industry. So Trump was not running for saint. He was a business guy who worked in the construction industry. And therefore, yes, there's been illegal aliens in there. And his goal is still to get rid of them, not to bring them in. So here's what I'm saying. Combine two things. When the infrastructure spending kicks in and when there's less illegal aliens taking those jobs. And this has been especially hard-hitting. I've interviewed black construction workers in Philly, for instance, who will just tell you. I've interviewed black union activists in L.A. This has been especially hard on the black community. The influx of illegal immigrants into the building trades has really hurt the black community hard. Now, this is going to be terrifying to the Democrats because the fact is good jobs coming to working class people, black, white, whoever, including Hispanics, of course, who are here legally. Because if you're Hispanic and you're here legally, God bless you. Welcome to the country. Happy Cinco de Mayo. Get to work, right? I mean, that's what it is for everybody. If you're here, I don't care if you're Latvian. I don't care who you are.
Here's the other part.
Job numbers are going to go up is what I'm saying.
Here's the other part. And certainly, you know, the issue of undocumented immigrants is a whole other segment.
Illegal. Just say the words.
Undocumented immigrants.
I know. You mispronounced it.
No, that was not an accident. So here's my point. There's been a discussion about, Bernie Sanders has said, if President Trump wants to put forth an infrastructure bill that's going to help Americans, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Here is the problem. You get a bunch of these guys from your dear Republican Party who think, basically people who have basically two moves, and that is tax cuts and deregulation. People who see if scientists said there's a comet heading towards Earth and it's going to kill us all, what should we do? They would say tax cuts and deregulate. That's all they ever say about anything. So if, in fact, you get some of these people who have already indicated their infrastructure bill, their idea of an infrastructure bill is the same as their idea of an environmental bill, of a jobs bill, of a growth bill, of every single bill, they say, here's what we need to do. We need to cut taxes and we need to deregulate because that's all they want to do anyway. Then it ain't going to fly because it's not an infrastructure bill. So the question is it going to be another iteration of people just saying, how can we cut taxes for corporations and deregulate corporations? It's like they got a bill that has two things on it. It says cut taxes and deregulate. And they say, what do we want to do? Infrastructure. Well, put a cover sheet on it that says infrastructure bill. See, that's the problem.
Here's what I'm saying.
That's the problem that I have.
For me to ask anybody not to be cynical, but why would you be cynical on this? Even Bannon, who is the hardcore guy in this, the infrastructure spending idea was his idea. So
I'm all for it. And if he does it, I'm behind. He's got me on his side. As long as it isn't simply, and there's been some ideas floated that were nothing more than tax cuts for corporations.
Not
formally, but there's been discussion informally even beforehand. And the discussion was about tax cuts for corporations that they could use if they decided to do infrastructure. If this is a real infrastructure bill that says we're going to spend X amount and we are actually going to do the things that really do need to be. I mean, there's indisputable. We got bridges and tunnels and all kinds of things that need to be done.
Trump was big on fixing the airports.
I'm not some kind of an ideologue that's going to simply say, well, the Republicans is for, well, everybody knows me, knows I'm not like that. I'm going to be like, if the conservatives are like, look, this is what we're going to spend on infrastructure and this is what we're going to fix.
When was the last time you flew into LaGuardia in New York?
I haven't been on it. It's been years.
But,
A lot of them are dumps. I'll put it like this. They can't compare you to when you go overseas and you feel like you're landing at a spaceport. And then you come here and you feel like, you know, you're landing at, you know, in Petticoat Junction, getting on the cannonball. Am I dating myself?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. I'll tell you who's got a nice airport. This is going to shock you, but to Saudi Arabia.
Of course.
When I
Dubai.
Went to, when I went to Lebanon, I flew through the Saudi Arabian airport. And here's what's interesting. So I had some fried chicken there. Now, that's not the interesting part. The interesting part, it was a popular chicken chain. It was clearly to me they had either, it was either they'd ripped off their exact branding, the colors and the logo.
11 herbs and spices or something.
Right. I'm going to tell you who it is because it's interesting. So I was in Saudi Arabia and it was like Southern's Chicken or something like that at the Saudi airport. Then I realized what they'd done. I realized whose branding they'd ripped off. Exactly. Churches.
Oh, but they can't say churches.
Exactly right.
That's funny.
Boom. That's exactly right. It's exactly right. They can't have Church's Chicken.
Exactly.
There.
That's funny.
And it was just funny to me. But yeah, look, airports are another area where we need increased infrastructure spending. And obviously fried chicken places are another one.
Well, you know, since I'm a pescatarian, how about fried fish place? Baked fish or, you know, broiled.
A lot of your southern fried chicken places are going to do seafood as well.
There we go.
Right.
But the long and short of it is, I think
they
everybody
have a deep
agrees.
Fryer. They got some breading. They don't really care what they put. They'd put a hot dog in there if they thought they could sell it.
Yes. Unlike some people, such as like Rush Limbaugh, who when Barack Obama was elected, he said, I want to see him fail. I don't want to see the president fail. I don't want president. Now, there's don't get me wrong. There are some things like his health care, but there are certain initiatives that I disagree with that I would like to see fail. But a lot of those conservatives would like to see fail, too. But the long and short of it is, I do always believe in if somebody has a good bill, I don't care who they are. And the numbers, look, here's the reality. The numbers have been going up now for probably the last day. They were going up in the fall. They've been going up for a while. And I think the only reason they dropped off in March was because we had that crazy freak snowstorm. That was it. All across, we had that crazy freak snowstorm. That's the real people were like, oh, the President Trump. Nah, we had a freak snowstorm. They're in the right direction. And I agree, an infrastructure bill, instead of fooling around with this healthcare craziness.
Well, let's talk about the healthcare craziness. Okay. You brought up the healthcare and the craziness. Let's talk about that. So the healthcare bill, when we did the show yesterday, the healthcare bill had been passed. And I was saying that in the House, and I was saying yesterday that this is going to not be the same bill when it hits the Senate that it is now. And that's what everyone in the Senate's saying, too. Some of these predictions, here's why I'm good at predictions.
This wasn't a real hard trick.
I make ones that are obvious, right?
Exactly.
And that was a really obvious one. Now, what's weird to me is a lot of people, we talked about this yesterday, a lot of people don't like to make the obvious predictions. Now, here's the other thing. The Senate is going to pass something. I believe that 100%.
It's dead on arrival in the House, whatever it is.
Well, no, I don't agree, because now we go to reconciliation. So the reconciliation phase is where this is going to get interesting. The Senate is going to pass something. And I did a Periscope last night, and I talked about this. The healthcare bill that passed, Breitbart was up there. My former colleagues at Breitbart were up there saying this is a victory for the Freedom Caucus, this healthcare bill. I don't agree. Because at the last day, they had a compromise with the moderates. So when you have to compromise with the moderates to get a bill passed, that's not a victory for the freedom. Am I missing something about what a victory would be? Like, that doesn't sound like a victory to me, right? But for some reason, well, I think I know why. I just think, look, I talked to a reporter yesterday. Right now, certain sites on the right, like Breitbart's a good example, are confused because our president's kind of confused. So the president was out there rah-rahing the House healthcare bill yesterday. Now, I wish they would just be straight with us. First off, I'm very upset that the bill got sent to a vote without being posted for 3 days, like the Republicans promised. So whatever the details of the bill are, you guys made a promise and you should have kept it. House Republicans promised they would not post a bill for 3 days before voting on it, so the American people would have a chance to look at it. They should have stood by that. And furthermore, anybody who's a Republican voter should be calling their congressman. You should not let them have a nice little Memorial Day break. You should call them and say, hey, listen, congressman, be polite. But say, hey, listen, you made a promise that you would post bills for 3 days. You should have kept it.
Well, here's the thought
about
the Senate.
And if you want my vote, you have to do that.
Here's the thing about the Senate. I think it's dead in the Senate, and I think there's some people in the Senate. So a while back, you know, when
you're saying the Senate won't pass anything?
Well, here's what I think. I think if they do, it'll be a poison pill bill. This is why. My belief is that there are, and if you count them, there are about 20 senators that are Republicans that are from states that expanded Medicaid. A lot of senators from states that have expanded. I mean, you know, you got some rest. You got Kentucky. You got Arkansas. You know what I mean? You got a lot of states. I could go on in Alaska. So, but the bottom line is, I believe that there are a lot of senators from states that have accepted expanded Medicaid, that have extensive numbers of people who are in Obamacare, who are afraid to touch it, who are afraid that if they go home, they're done. And I think a lot of them are right.
You have four stalwarts over there in the Senate. You got Rand Paul on essentially the straight repeal people. Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, exactly right. And then another one.
But I'm not I believe, this is my opinion, Rand Paul is saying he's a straight repeal person because he ain't going back to Kentucky with Obamacare done. That he stands straight repeal because he knows that'll never, that's a way to always vote against it.
I think it's because Rand Paul's a principled guy. But that
he'd
being
be a
said,
principled citizen, not that, a principled Senate if they straight, senator, if they straight, you know good and well, if they straight repeal it, he's done in Kentucky. Would you disagree with that?
I would disagree with that. I think people who elected Rand Paul knew what they were getting with Rand Paul.
So you think
the Paul brand, the Ron Paul, Rand Paul brand, is what he came in on.
I think Rand Paul could kill Obamacare completely. Kentucky Connect.
Well,
gone. 300,000 people in Medicaid. All of those people gone. They get a letter that says you no longer have health care. Game over. And you think that Rand Paul would keep his job if that happened?
Well, I don't know if that. First off, I don't know what he's pushing for. But what I know is he's a straight repeal.
He's a straight repeal guy. That's straight repeal. They all lose their health care. Do you think that he could keep his job if he were to get what you claim is his goal?
What they would argue, what I think Paul would argue, and I'm not trying to make the case for him, is that a clean repeal bill would have been closer. But that being said, Paul has shown repeatedly, this is a guy who teamed up with Mitch McConnell when he had to, okay? And so...
Who will kill it too.
Paul, no, he won't kill it. The Senate, I guarantee you, I'll place the bet right now. Again, I'm good at making predictions because I make easy ones. The Senate will pass a bill, period. They will get a bill out of there. Now, reconciliation is where it's going to get interesting, but something is going to pass. It's clear to me something's going to pass. The only thing I hope is that the American people have a say in it. That's what I hope.
What's going to pass is time. Okay, we're passing a little bit more time, and we're going to come back. We got to talk about the French election, which is coming up any day now. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.
We are back. You're listening to Fault Lines. It's my bad. I thought it was you, but of course it's me. Hey, how's it going, everybody? Third segment, Fault Lines. Let's talk about France. Let's go to France. My brain just went to France there for a second.
Yeah, I think so.
I was looking something up because I thought it was going to be you, but of course it's me. So let's talk about this election. So right now, here's the situation. Let's be realistic about it. We had the...
Oh, do we have to be realistic? That just messes up radio. That's not talk radio if we're realistic.
I like to be idealistic. I like to be realistic.
Okay.
So...
Just for this segment only.
The French election was a free-for-all, and then it gets down to two, and now the voting is going to be Sunday between... Macron and Le Pen. And
you got that down pretty good. I'll give you that. You just kind of like blur out your consonant.
Actually, I was just phlegmy there. That's what happened. Forgive me. I was just a little phlegmy. But this is between two people. And again, a lot of people in the U.S. don't know about them. So if you listen to the mainstream media, you've got Macron, who's a businessman and a moderate.
Banker.
And you've got Marine
Le
Pen.
We call them neoliberals on the left.
Well, and Marine Le Pen, who's a right-wing nut job. That's the way the mainstream media is portraying this. Now, what's going on here is Le Pen, who was just endorsed yesterday by Nigel Farage, who was the person behind Brexit, and that's significant. Le Pen is really in there because there's been a wave of immigration, let's face it, elite and forced immigration, basically, as the Syrian refugee crisis has picked up and caused massive, possibly continent-changing immigration in Europe. We've seen problems in Germany, we've seen problems in the UK, and we've seen problems in France, and we've seen terror attack after terror attack after terror attack, from Charlie Hebdo to these truck attacks that happened in Nice to the recent attacks that happened. And Le Pen, in some ways, is the stop the madness candidate, right? In some ways, she's just the person who's looking at this going, hey, she's riding a wave of sanity. So, of course, the mainstream media wants to demonize her. Now, a couple things that are interesting about this. Number one, she's behind by 24 points right now in the polls. So, again, being realistic, I don't think she's going to win. And, by the way, I thought Trump was going to win, and I think you did, too.
Oh, I predicted it for a long time.
So I thought Trump was going to win, no matter what the media said. In this case, I don't think she's going to win. And in part, I don't think she's going to win because, quite frankly, there's no equivalent of Breitbart France. This is part of the reason I think that Nigel Farage won Brexit, is because you had a guy like Steve Bannon, who was a visionary, who saw what was happening in Europe, started a London bureau, and if you were in the UK, Breitbart London was really the only dose of sanity. Raheem Kassam, who I'm a big fan of over there, Raheem Kassam worked with Farage for a long time. And Raheem Kassam's a great editor, and he understands the sweep of history here. There's no equivalent in France. And I don't know where the French are turning to get real news, where they're turning to get non-narrative-driven news. Now, the other thing that's interesting is how they're demonizing Russia now, where Macron recently banned RT and other Russian
and
news
Sputnik,
outlets.
Yeah.
And Sputnik, yeah.
From his headquarters. And they're doing the same. They're trying some of the same. You know what's interesting? So for those of you who are listening who aren't familiar with the term, on the left we have a term that we used, and that is neoliberals. And basically, this is the, you know, the kind of establishment Wall Street people that crushed them, that whose policies have crushed the working class worldwide. And this is the what's interesting is my view of this. My view really is, you know, in America, we looked at Hillary Clinton and Trump, and we saw it as, oh, this is America. I see France as exactly the same thing. And what's interesting is the people in French, the people on the left see the same thing. There's an opinion poll that says 54% of the people who voted for Macron in the first round voted tactically, that they didn't really support him. It was just a tactical vote. Most of the people, the left voters, the guy's name was Mélenchon, most of his people are saying, we're either going to not vote, we're going to spoil our vote, which is, you know, they just write something on it, or we're going to, you know, vote for Le Pen, whatever. So what you see is, you see people, similar to here, you see people on the left here saying, I'm seeing Trump, Hillary. I'm seeing a neoliberal banker, a neoliberal puppet for the billionaires. I'm seeing Marine Le Pen, who they don't see. They see too as a far right wing, and to some extent, going to be a puppet for the billionaires also, from our perspective. And we're looking at it saying there's nothing for us. And you end up with a lot of people now. You're getting a huge group of people who are backing out. No, she's not going to win. There's a different dynamic there.
But I don't think she'll win. Yeah.
And here's the other part of it. There's something else that's happening. President Obama is formally, just like he went over and he tried to, you know, he tried to intervene in against Brexit. He is formally endorsing Macron. He has recorded a video that Macron has tweeted. But and here's my perspective from being a Bernie person. You guys are screaming about foreign interference in the Democratic election, that foreign leaders should not, with at best dubious claims about Russia, and I'm being kind, you have no evidence, but you're claiming about foreign intervention if you did have any evidence, yet President Obama is just outright intervening, saying this is who should win. He's going on TV, he's going on the internet, and he's trying to help this person. I think it is awful hypocritical. But again, from the perspective of the left, this is just, these are what the neoliberals do worldwide. They're all trying to stick together, and there are a lot of people. And let me end up with this. There are a lot of people who look at Macron and Le Pen, and they say, you know, you may look at Le Pen and say, okay, she's a nationalist, she's a far right winger, she's dangerous. What they say is the reason that the far right wing gets an opportunity, the reason that people consider the far right wing is because you guys screwed up so bad. And if you put and there are those arguing, just like there were those here arguing with Hillary. If we put the neoliberal in, the Hillary Clinton or the Macron, what we get next time, they're going to screw it up so bad, what we get next time will be even worse than the option opportunity now.
Well, I'm looking at this story here on CNN. People can look it up. Here's the title. Obama endorses French presidential candidate Macron. Okay?
Macron? Now,
Macron. McRib. I think Macron is McRib. I think so. I'm not looking at my French translation. But I want to point out something here. This article in CNN, it does something very, very interesting. This is how, by the way, this is how the media tricks you. It's a paragraph about four paragraphs down. It says, it's unusual, and I'll try to do a CNN thing. It's unusual for a former U.S. president to make an endorsement to a foreign election, although former U.S. President Bill Clinton backed future British Prime Minister Gordon Brown in 2006. Ah, now that's interesting. And then it goes on to say other stuff. It goes on to say they left a message with Obama's office, which wasn't immediately returned. Let me ask you, are they leaving out anything? CNN leaving out? Oh, I know. President Obama, when he was president, got directly involved with arguing against Brexit.
He flew to London. And urged Britons to, and I quote, stick together with the EU.
And he was so adamant about it, he didn't even fly in a plane. He just flapped his arms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what's really scary about it.
And then, but no, he flew to London to attack Brexit. Now, for some reason, CNN forgets to mention that to their readers here, which to me is an obvious another story. But they only mention, well, Bill Clinton did it. Well, okay, that's true, but Barack Obama did it to try to. And so the only saving grace here is that Obama did not, he failed. With the Brexit vote, right? Trying to sway that. But it's not shocking in a sense that Obama would support Macron because Macron is making himself out to be the French Obama. That's the way he's pitching himself. Now, which is interesting because first off, he's a businessman.
He's a banker, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is not Obama's background. Obama was not a businessman. He was a lawyer.
Establishment on both sides are real close with the bankers.
Well, but he was also a community organizer, taught and brought up in the Saul Alinsky School of Community Organizing, right? And so it's interesting that Macron is trying to ride Obama's coattails, as it were. Now, I got to say that the bigger sweep here is that no matter what the outcome, and by the way, let me explain one of the reasons I don't think Marine Le Pen's going to win. Because I look at the election that happened in the Netherlands a few months ago, where Geert Wilders lost. And by the way, I'm going to go back to Brexit for a second and what I said about, I think that Breitbart London and people like Raheem Kassam made a big difference there. That was a close election. Brexit was a close election. In fact, if you remember, early in the night, they thought it was,
yep,
they called it the other way. It was a Dewey defeats Truman moment, right? And Geert Wilders was down by less points than Le Pen is and lost, okay? So what concerns me in this, and the reason I don't think she's going to be able to pull it out, is because there's no media who's going to present things from a nationalist, populist, anti-elitist, anti-globalist perspective. And when that happens, the media just gets to say, They're a nut. That's what they do over and over again. They're a nut. Now, the interesting aspect of this is also the lawsuits that are going back and forth. So, for instance, in the debate the other night, Le Pen basically accused Macron of having offshore bank accounts. And he sued, he took her to court. Now, that's interesting. That's interesting to me because it's a cultural difference between this country and France. Because when was the last time you saw presidential candidates sue each other? Right? In other words,
doesn't happen.
Even during Clinton and Trump, they talked some smack, but they didn't. Even during Bush v. Gore, the lawsuits didn't happen until after the election. So I'm just saying it's an interesting phenomenon that presidential candidates would sue each other. Right, you know what I mean?
I would argue that Trump and Clinton were too busy afterwards, like, you know, backslapping and giving each other high fives and, you know.
They clearly weren't.
I remember President Trump leading a round of applause, a standing ovation for Secretary Clinton. But here's the other thing, though. Here's what I would argue.
Because Trump has been on both sides.
He still is on both sides.
Here's
where I am. And I know there are a lot of conservatives that listen to this show. And here's what I'm going to tell you guys. You guys are going to wise up. You guys are going to wise up to where we are. And here's where we are. We recognize that the establishment wings of both parties, they're not here for you. They're not here for me. You guys still think for a while that Donald Trump's kind of on your side, that he's a populist. You're a little confused because he's filled his advisors, he's surrounded himself with advisors that are a bunch of Democratic establishment people that we rejected. But at some point, you guys are going to say, you know, the progressives are right. Those people are not on our side.
No, the progressives aren't right. And furthermore, let me back you off on this a little bit. Because you don't understand, Republicans already woke up. This was the wake-up election. 2016 was the election where Republicans woke up. Now, let me again.
If they woke up with Trump, they better go back to sleep because they've been had.
I hate to bum you out before the weekend, but your guy Bernie's a complete sellout. And you got to recognize that. What's that?
I love Bernie.
I know you love Bernie, which is why
I support his policies.
I know, I hate to break it to you, right? I'm going to ruin your whole weekend because I'm going to burst your bubble here. Bernie sold out, and he sold, and we know what he sold out for. He got paid.
Bernie didn't sell out.
Did I miss the part where he endorsed Hillary Clinton? Who did he endorse in 2016? That's a sellout. If everything you're saying is true, and he's as opposed to Hillary Clinton as you say he is, the fact is he sold out. And in fact, he sold out because he got paid. How many houses does Bernie Sanders own?
Bernie Sanders stands for the same policies that he stood for the last 30 years.
That doesn't make any difference.
That makes all the difference to me.
When you endorse the opposition, Bernie sold out. Bernie should have been, if Bernie wanted to go up against Clinton, he could have been fighting it tooth and nail and said, you know what? I may be out of this election, but I'm not going to stand for an establishment clown like Hillary Clinton coming in, and I'll be back in 2020. And if I'm not back, somebody else is going to be
policy
back
person,
with my same values. So don't act like progressives have anything on this. Conservatives are the ones who woke up. Conservatives are the ones who, in fact, woke up on this garbage.
For a policy person like me, policy is everything.
Me too.
I don't have to love
me
a candidate.
Too.
In fact, you know what? I'm not going to name any names, but I know a particular member of Congress that is very mean that I don't like, but I agree with this person's policies and I vote for him every time.
Republicans right now push back on Trump in a way that they never did. Democrats never,
ahead.
Democrats never, ever push back on Obama, ever. They never pushed back on him. They laid down whatever Obama wanted to do. They were okay with it. And I know this because I was on the left in 2008. I was writing for the Huffington Post. And when Obama sold out the country by being in favor of the individual mandate all of a sudden, which is exactly what happened, all of a sudden Obama, who'd been running in the primaries against the mandate, the Democrats shut up about it. This circular firing squad, the cult-like unity is all in the Democrats. You're seeing the reason Kushner was a trending topic a few weeks ago is Republicans don't lay there and take it. And unfortunately, I know you're trying to give this idealized image of Bernie and his supporters. Bernie Sanders is a sellout. He sold you out, Garland. He sold you out.
Well, you're welcome to your opinion. But my perspective is this. When I see this, here's what I see. I also see the U.S. election from this perspective, because all I see is a couple of candidates of fear. You've got one candidate, whether it's Le Pen or Trump, saying, it's these darn immigrants. They're the ones that are giving you the shaft that you have to be afraid of. We got to deal with them. But then you have, whether it's a Hillary Clinton or Macron, who's saying, no, it's the far right candidate that you really have to be afraid of. Nobody has
and
anything.
It's Bernie Sanders saying global warming is a bigger threat than
neither
terrorism.
Neither of these candidates have any thing to offer for the working class. They got nothing for you. You know what they have? You got to be scared of this group over here, or you got to be scared of this guy over here.
I've heard Bernie Sanders' speeches. Don't act like Bernie Sanders didn't use fear. The difference is
Bernie is not running in France.
It doesn't make any difference.
Yes,
he's running
does.
Here,
he's
and the American people and the American worker realize that Bernie Sanders flying in on a unicorn was not going to save anything. And so the fact is, don't act like Sanders never used fear. He used it all the time. This whole global warming thing is just fear-mongering. That's what it is.
Yeah, but you know, guess what? If that's the case, then scientists use fear. It's like saying, well, you know, doctors use fear when they say to you, you better stop smoking.
The issue isn't global warming. It's man.
Doctors use fear. When they tell you to stop smoking, you're going to get cancer. That's science, and I know you guys have a little bit of a problem with that. But the bottom line is, we're still
right. Republicans hate science, but we can figure out that an 8-month-old fetus is a baby.
Here's what's going to happen. We can figure
that little bit of science out. We're not confused on that part.
The conservatives and the far right's going to have when we start hitting 2020 and beyond. There are going to be some candidates coming out that have something to offer the working class other than you have to be
and
afraid.
Be Republicans, and those candidates will
be Republicans. They won't be Democrats.
They'll absolutely be Republicans.
Certainly they won't.
The populist revolution in this country is being led by Republicans.
Oh, yeah, Donald Trump is leading it with Jared Kushner and Gary Cohn and Jay Taylor.
You mean the Democrats who are in the Trump administration are the problem. I agree with you.
Exactly.
The Democrats are the problem.
The ones that the Democratic Party rejected.
The Republicans aren't the problem.
The ones that we rejected. And he took them, and now they're running his campaign right down the toilet.
Right. So the Democrats, 5 p.m. today.
5 p.m. today, the Sirius Safe Zone's going
to
effect.
Which is now. It's 5 p.m. right now.
Holy moly.
And we will see you Monday. Hey, everybody, have a great weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. Tell your friends to listen to Fault Lines Monday through Friday with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.